A new book is just out, actually officially out in 2 days from Chelsea Green, the Vermont publisher. It is called Rules for Revolutionaries, How Big Organizing Can Change Everything. This book is a bold challenge to the political establishment and the rules that govern campaign strategy. It tells the story of a breakthrough experiment conducted during the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign that was a technology-driven team that empowered volunteers to build and manage the infrastructure to make 75 million calls, launch 8 million text messages, and hold more than 100,000 public meetings in an effort to put Bernie's message on the boards and put his campaign over the top. The authors of this book are our guests today. There are two authors, Becky Bond. She served as a senior advisor on the Sanders presidential campaign and was an architect of the campaign's national volunteer-driven grassroots effort. Prior to joining the Sanders campaign, Becky served as political director at Credo and was a co-founder of the Credo Super PAC, which was named by Mother Jones as one of, quote, 2012's least horrible super PACs, for helping to defeat five sitting Tea Party Republican congressmen. And the other co-author is Zach Exley. Zach served also as a senior advisor on the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign and was a union organizer before that, becoming MoveOn.org's first organizing director in its campaign to stop the Iraq War in 2003. He was an early advisor to the Howard Dean presidential campaign, and he helped transfer MoveOn.org's early fundraising and organizing discoveries into presidential politics, then serving as John Kerry's director of online fundraising and communications, raising more than $100 million online for Kerry when he was running for president. So Becky Bond and Zach Exley, thanks for joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
Hey, thanks so much for having us. We love talking to Vermont people, of course. You guys are responsible for so much good, and you gave us Bernie. So, but first of all, we want to say the book is available now, actually. So please, I hope your listeners will go check it out. It's shipping as we speak.
Good. Well, Zach, let me start with you. You have a preface in this book. The first sentence of your preface is, "This book has gone to the printer before the 2016 presidential election, so we don't know whether Clinton or Trump is the president as you're reading this." So now we do. You foresee that Trump could pull this out?
I mean, you know, I think we all, you know, in our little circle from the Bernie campaign, you know, we were just, as we analyzed the election, I mean, just the people from our team, from Becky and my team, you know, we were all kind of going back and forth, you know, like a lot of people. And when we wrote that, actually, you know, we were worried people would think, you know, that people would think we were, you know, being overdramatic and crazy, like Trump ever had a chance. And, but, you know, I don't know, I think that something told us that, you know, I mean, we saw it in how people responded to Bernie, that Americans are really angry about the 40-year decline in income, about mass incarceration, about so many things, and the Clinton campaign, I think that, you know, at least I felt like it was just very tone deaf, and it just, they didn't seem to be, Clinton just didn't seem to communicate that she understood how much people were hurting, and you know, in that vacuum, Trump was able to really connect with voters in a very powerful way with some voters, right? And we've got to remember that only a quarter of the adult population voted for Trump, and Hillary Clinton has so far gotten something like 2.5 million more votes than Trump. So we got to keep that in perspective. But still, it's horrifying what's happening right now.
What was your reaction early in the morning after Election Day to what you saw unfolding on the screen?
I was in California, so, you know, it was actually late in the evening when it became clear that the election was going, you know, terribly wrong. And I'll be honest, you know, there was disbelief, there were tears, there was anger, there was real fear. You know, in the group of organizers that I was watching returns with, people that I was with, people who had been involved in turning out students on campus just across the battleground states just to avoid this this very outcome. And at the same time, you know, it dawned on us that, you know, the things that we have been warning people about the total collapse of the Democratic Party and its inability to address the problems facing so many Americans, you know, was actually happening before our very eyes. And the very real and our consequences of that is that we now have President Trump. We also felt, or at least I did at that moment, you know, that we're going to have an enormous amount of work to do, and many people don't know how to start. And so Zach and I, in some ways, in our grief and our anger and our puzzlement about what's going on, you know, we feel very humble that we are actually have a book that can start a conversation about different ways of organizing, which we hope will give people a way, you know, to get to work, because that's what I'm hearing from other people is, what do we do now, right? And we don't need to wait to have that conversation. We need to talk about that now, because it's going to take all of us doing a lot of work to get ourselves out of this hole we've dug for ourselves.
So it strikes me that the starting line for the conversation that you're trying to inspire here has moved dramatically in the last week, and I'm even struck by the title. I'm going to guess that you, like many people, assumed Hillary Clinton would win. And so you titled this Rules for Revolutionaries, thinking that you would have kind of a centrist Democrat in office, and you needed to inspire people who wanted to change further, faster. Now you could also almost call this Rules for Moderate Democrats, since they're the ones who are the most shell-shocked of all right now, not to mention revolutionaries. Has that crossed your mind?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I personally see this a little differently. That the Democratic Party and the Republican Party have been presiding over this 40-year decline in income, this rise of mass incarceration that's really, I mean, kind of just unspeakably violent and horrible for millions of people in this country. And you know, we could go on and on with the list of terrible things. I mean, like, maternal mortality is on the rise in the United States. We're the only industrialized country where that's true, and we're falling behind a big list of developing countries in maternal mortality. So, we're a little bit that frog in the boiling water, right? And the water is now boiling. And it's been kind of a gradual slide over many decades. But I think, you know, that's, you know, the great thing about Bernie's campaign is, I think when he said, let's have a political revolution, that's what America needs, you know, there were a lot of, you know, sort of institutional progressives and, you know, mainstream Democrats, you know, that were astonished that he would use the word, you know, use the R word, you know, and surely people were going to freak out and be horrified. And actually, they weren't. People, there was, you know, I mean, wasn't it amazing how little criticism there was of Bernie framing, you know, the solution in those stark terms? And it's because people really know that a lot of people know that that's needed. And when we say, when Bernie said political revolution, and I think when his supporters heard political revolution, we meant that we need to throw the bums out and elect a new generation of leaders who know what's going on and actually are thinking in terms of solutions big enough to change people's lives.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think the term revolutionaries is probably more apt than ever if we're going to take Donald Trump at his word and understand that we have, you know, we have basically elected a fascist into office. And so, you know, resisting the Trump regime and rebuilding our democratic institutions is going to take nothing less than a revolution. You know, it is ironic that in a country like the United States, you know, people who have an agenda that's as simple as, you know, we want people to be able to go to the hospital when they're sick, that is considered revolutionary. But that's where both the Democratic and the Republican Party establishments have taken us in this country. And so we want people to start to think about, well, what does a revolutionary mindset look like? What does it take into account? What are its values and what does it do? Because it's very different than the neoliberal incremental approach, which has gotten us to where we are today.
So one of the phenomena, and I just to remind listeners, you're listening to the Vermont Conversation. We're talking to Becky Bond and Zach Exley, authors of the new book, Rules for Revolutionaries, How Big Organizing Can Change Everything. Becky and Zach were both senior advisors to the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign, and you can join this conversation by calling 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. So when you first, in the fall of 2015, were signed on to the Bernie Sanders campaign, Becky, you describe penning an email with the subject line, "This is how we win." What was your vision at the very beginning of this, Becky, about this is how Bernie Sanders could win?
Well, you know, we back in 2015, you know, Zach and I didn't join the campaign because we thought it was a great messaging opportunity or we wanted to be on board with a protest candidate. We really thought Bernie Sanders had a chance of winning the Democratic nomination and could go on and win the White House because the things that he was talking about was really resonating with Americans in ways that neither of us had seen in our entire careers, right? We saw that Bernie had presented a vision for America. He had a political analysis that when people heard about it, they weren't even just saying, "I'm going to vote for that." Hundreds of thousands of them were saying, "I'm ready to volunteer and get to work to make this happen." So what we saw was Bernie Sanders called for, he said, "We need a political revolution with millions of people to start addressing the radical problems that we face with solutions that are just as radical as those problems." And so we saw that as this opportunity to make the most of this moment and take this politician who had only 3% name recognition when he started and get his message out to as many people as possible so that he could win, because this was our chance to address some of these crises like the climate crisis, the structural racism, and income inequality that we simply can't wait for decades and decades for the incrementalist approach to provide solutions for.
And how did you end up connecting with the Sanders campaign? What was your connection? You'd been working in California, I gather, for Credo. What was the nexus there?
Yeah, well, so I had, you know, at Credo, you know, like a lot of advocacy groups that care about the public interest, you know, we've been working with Senator Sanders' office, you know, for a very long time because he's such a leader in the Senate for the issues that we cared about, whether it was fighting for net neutrality or fighting to jail the bankers who ripped off Americans, and following his lead on these issue campaigns. So we knew that Bernie Sanders had would support the policies that would actually solve our problems. And when he stepped up outside of the Senate and said he was going to run for president, I saw it as a chance.
Okay, we're going to take a short break here for a couple of minutes for the news, and we're going to be back with Becky Bond and Zach Exley in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. We're joined this hour by Becky Bond and Zach Exley. They were senior organizers for the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign and now authors of the new book from Chelsea Green, Rules for Revolutionaries, How Big Organizing Can Change Everything. Zach Exley, what does a Donald Trump presidency mean for both of the major political parties, since, after all, the mainstream establishment of both parties opposed him?
Yeah, I mean, there's no way to predict, but I think, I don't know, I'm disturbed at how a lot of Democratic leaders, you know, like President Obama, you know, for example, are kind of legitimizing this. Now, you know, obviously, you know, we all respect the democratic processes, but, you know, to kind of assume that Trump is not going to try to follow through on his campaign promises, I think that's a really bad assumption. And we have to remember some of the stuff that Trump promised over and over and over again. He promised, and I know, you know, he started dissembling towards the end, but he promised to deport 11 million of our neighbors. And, you know, and when people asked him, "That's how in the world are you going to do that?" he started talking about, you know, citizen forces, you know, and where people would be deputized to, you know, spy on their neighbors and identify undocumented people. And, he's talking about moving, you know, an effort to round up and move, you know, millions and millions of people. And when he started walking that back, you know, he's still talking about millions. You know, maybe not everybody now, he's saying, but he's still talking about several million people. And that's just one of the things. You know, I mean, on torture, you know, one of the things he said was, you know, whether torture works or not, maybe it doesn't work, but, you know, they deserve it anyways. And that's tearing at the fundamental American values, you know, not to mention just going right against the Geneva Conventions on human rights, right? So, and, you know, we could go on and on of the really kind of scary and un-American stuff that Trump promised. And we need to take him at face value, and instead of saying, well, let's wait and see if he's an entirely different person than he campaigned to be, we should say we really disagree with with X, Y, and Z that Trump promised he would do, and we have to start resisting right now.
So let's talk about how that kind of mobilization takes place in opposition or for your own experience. What was the key to the Sanders campaign mobilizing what really was a coast-to-coast army of volunteers? Becky Bond, do you want to take a stab at that?
Sure. I like your description of the coast-to-coast army of volunteers, because that's certainly what we had. You know, we learned something that probably is pretty simple. It's one of those things that that when you hear it, you're like, ah, of course that's true. But, you know, The you don't get a revolution if you don't ask for one, and that's one of our first rules in the book. And so when Bernie asked for a political revolution, it was sort of our job to go out there and actually ask people to join the revolution. And we found out when we actually asked people to do that, not only were they ready to join, but they were ready to do something big. And so I think that's what this country needs now. We need to go out there and ask people to do something big, to win something big. And we need to get them to work. I mean, the American people, they know how bad it is, and the problem has been that the politicians have not been giving them solutions that they're willing to work for. And so now with Trump in the presidency, we need to build a strong opposition, and that's going to take a lot of work, and then we also have to rebuild the Democratic Party. And so that all starts with just asking people to join together and start this work. And, you know, the thing about our book is that's different than a lot of, books about politics, is that it really is an organizing book. And there are some simple things in it that we need to do. One of our chapters is about how to hold an effective meeting with volunteers that explains the strategy and it gets everybody right to work. And it was certainly something that we felt like was urgent and we needed on the Bernie campaign, but I think it's really even more urgent now when people find themselves really wanting to be together and figure out what they can do about this to design some meetings, right, that will effectively put people to meaningful work to protect the people that are going to be most at risk in a Trump administration, and then also to start the hard work of ensuring that we have a wave election in 2018 and we start to sweep out some of the current people in Congress and put people in Congress that are actually going to vote against and stop the Trump agenda.
So what does this look like right now? You have people, as anybody who's opened their social media feed knows, highly agitated, depressed, mobilized, depending on what side they're on. So to kickstart this, you know, this wave, a counter wave for the next election and then for the next presidential election, where do you begin? You began in a very, what many would have considered an improbable place, calling for revolution, something that in America, it's a word you don't hear much. What are you going to try to do with people right now to begin the movement you're speaking about?
Well, I think one thing that's really important is it's not about what either Zach or I going to set out to do. It's really about your listeners, right? And I think everybody's asking themselves, what can I do? What can my community do? And we really want to say, it's up to you, and don't wait for an organization or someone who's a professional organizer to set out a strategy. People need to get together right now, invite everybody in your Facebook feed to go to a meeting, or if you're at a march, take a sign-up clipboard and have people sign up to meet. And what that meeting is about, and you can read our book to get some tips on how to run an effective meeting if you've never run one before, what is it that's most pressing in your community right now? For example, I'm sure there are many communities across the state of Vermont that aren't sanctuary cities, that don't have a formalized objection to cooperating with federal immigration officials. And we need cities and counties across the country to agree to stand up and say, when the federal authorities come for our neighbors to deport them, we're not going to help. We're not going to call them. We're going to be a safe place for the immigrants who have been so endangered by this election of Donald Trump. And that's just one thing that people can do, but we're really going to have to rely on the grassroots to come together and not wait for the politicians and not wait for the big brand name organizations, but to start organizing together. Because, you know, as depressed or angry or scared as we are, we'll all feel better when we're working on the solution. And so that work needs to start now.
What, Zach Exley, what do you think failed on such a catastrophic level with Clinton's get out the vote efforts?
Well, I mean, first of all, Clinton, you know, like we said, got 2.5 million or something. I haven't seen the latest numbers, but it's, you know, millions more votes than Trump. So we shouldn't say that Clinton's get out the vote effort failed. I think Becky's a better person to talk about, you know, the actual, you know, dynamics in the field. But I think another aspect from the sort of techniques and the, you know, actual work of the get out the vote operation was the messaging, you know, and also just basic decisions about who to talk to. And for some weird reason, the Clinton campaign wasn't really trying to talk to everybody. And I think she, was it that she didn't go to Wisconsin, or she went to Wisconsin once? I forget.
I don't think she went to Wisconsin after the Democratic National
Convention. After the convention, yeah. And she wasn't spending enough time, you know, in key states, you know, where there was evidence that she was losing support. So I think, you know, I think there was just the campaign, you know, must have been in a little bit of a bubble, you know, and I don't know, I heard somebody say Brooklyn bubble, and that's, you know, of course, referring to the new hipster Brooklyn, you know, not Bernie's Brooklyn. And so, you know, I think maybe that's, you know, I think that the campaign just fell out of touch with where the American people are at and wound up ignoring whole regions of the country and whole chunks of the American people.
Yeah, I mean, it's true that, you know, that the Clinton campaign wasn't running big volunteer canvases in a lot of these states. You know, we believe in going back to an older form of organizing, mass volunteer organizing that's been part of every successful, you know, social movement that the United States has seen. And that's when, you know, you have a big, bold message that inspires people and you get them to volunteer and you go out and talk to as many people as possible and try to win them over to your cause. And in a lot of Democratic, you know, political campaigns in the last 20 years, the focus has been trying to figure out how to run a campaign that talks to as few voters as possible, identifying some slice of the electorate of swing voters, and sometimes they give them a name like soccer moms or NASCAR dads, you know, and then tailoring a message to those few people just to eke out the smallest majority necessary. And when you do this, you know, often they use these statistical models to identify who needs to be turned out, and if you don't also have a lot of people going around actually talking to voters, then you can really, if you make some assumptions that are wrong, you can really get things wrong and not turn out the voters or not know which voters need to hear from you, and have talking to enough people to get a majority of people turning out on election day. And, you know, we don't know what actually happened, but I think we do have to ask a lot of questions, because I think, especially at the end, there were enough volunteers or enough people who have been willing to volunteer that we could have called every single phone number we had in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, or that we could have had people knocking on doors in those states if someone had rung the bell and said, hey, we're talking to people, we're realizing that people that we thought were going to vote for Clinton are not going to do that. And so there was some kind of failure that they didn't either know who to turn out, or they didn't do what it would take to turn people out. And that's something that we've got to address before the 2018 elections.
You write, Becky, in your intro that research shows that, contrary to the conventional wisdom, the big money approach to elections isn't what really moves voters. When it comes to moving voters to the polls in elections, it's not the broadcast TV ads that matter. Robocalls make a difference only to the consultant who earns money making them. Direct mail doesn't have much of an effect. as it turns out, when you look at the actual campaign results, the gold standard for moving voters in elections is a volunteer having a conversation with a voter on the doorstep or on the telephone. How do you come to that conclusion? Because, as you say, the conventional wisdom states otherwise, that the ground game, in fact, is only worth a few points either direction.
That's right. Well, you know, there's a growing body of social science research that tells us this definitively. Back in the 90s, some political scientists, a group of them led by a professor at Yale named Donald Green, started applying the methodology of drug trials to treatments of voters in elections. And so what they do is they sort of randomize a universe of voters and put some of them in sort of the placebo control group. And then the other group of voters, they test a door knock or a phone call by a volunteer or by a paid worker or direct mailer. And there have been hundreds and hundreds of these experiments, and they all point to, and this is not about persuading who they're for or not, but when an election is close and you want to try and get people who are with you to the polls, it's not even close that having a fired-up volunteer, having a conversation with a voter, materially impacts the likelihood that voter is actually going to show up on election day. And the other thing that's actually great about this is that, you know, this is what little d democracy is about, right? So if we actually follow the cheapest and best tactics, we're also going to strengthen our democracy. I mean, unfortunately, we have a culture around political consultants that make a lot of money off of producing these mailers and these television ads and actually get a percentage of placement of television ads, that there's this perverse incentive for them to actually spend more money on the less effective tactics. Nobody gets a percentage of volunteer field. No field director gets to buy a summer house after the election is over, and that's just simply not true about people who run the big advertising budgets and do the media buys.
So, one question is, how do you explain, if you've had these substantive, you know, conversations at the door, that you had this phenomenon all around the country we've heard about, where people who voted for Bernie also considered voting for Trump, and perhaps they did, and maybe they did in the general election?
I think it's like, you know, I mean, obviously, so there's some people in every demographic that voted for Trump, and Trump won the election, even if he didn't win the popular vote, he won the election. And you can look at every demographic, whether it's Latinos or African Americans, or whether it's students, or whether it's white women, that some of them voted for Trump. So no doubt some Bernie voters did vote for Trump, but they overwhelmingly voted, and many of us volunteered to defeat Trump. But I think what happened in some ways is that, you know, the Democrats simply didn't offer an alternative vision for how they were going to solve the problems that were facing America. I remember being in Iowa in a diner during the campaign, and there was a waitress, and she was trying to decide between Bernie and Trump. This was during the primary, and her problem was the Affordable Care Act, and you know, she had been forced to pay for insurance under Obamacare. And yet her deductibles were so high that she couldn't go get health care. Like when she was sick, she couldn't go to the doctor because she couldn't afford to pay the deductible. And so she didn't see Obamacare as the government, you know, solving problems that she had in her life. She saw it as being worse off than she was before. So I think a lot of people just didn't trust that the current establishment, Republican or otherwise, or Democrat, was going to solve their problems. And they decided to roll the dice on change. And the most disturbing part of this is that it's clear that you know, Donald Trump is a racist and a misogynist, and a lot of our fellow Americans voted for him even so. But I think for some part of the Trump electorate, it was an earnest attempt to change things because you know, the status quo, it's killing people, and they just couldn't motivate to vote for more of the same.
Zach Exley, and we're talking on the Vermont Conversation with Zach Exley and Becky Bond, co-authors of the new book Rules for Revolutionaries, How Big Organizing Can Change Everything. So, Zach, why didn't Bernie Sanders win?
Well, Bernie started with 3% name recognition and, you know, was, you know, barely showing up in the polls, right? And he was a very unlikely candidate to be taken seriously, you know, by conventional wisdom. You know, he's 74 years old, which people talked a lot about. he was known as a socialist and didn't run from that label. He's a very unconventional candidate, and going up against Hillary Clinton, who basically had universal name recognition and, had been campaigning for years and years and years, and had a huge, powerful political establishment, gunning for her. I think as far as we got, we wound up getting 46% of the pledged delegates. Which I think is really quite remarkable. And, the credit for that goes to, Bernie, his message and what a great messenger he was and all the people that worked so hard on his campaign, the volunteers and the staff. But ultimately, when you run a campaign and you lose, you have to look inside your own campaign. You can't blame the stuff outside your campaign because you knew from the beginning that you can't control the stuff outside your campaign. You can only control what you do. And so what could we have done differently? We could have started earlier. We could have started building the kind of on our team, if we had been able to start building the volunteer infrastructure that we built much earlier, then, we would have just been so much bigger and we would have been making so many more voter contacts when it counted, in those weeks leading up to Iowa and all through the primaries. We would have had time to just identify so many voters, make our field operations on the ground so much more efficient, gotten people trained better. So, note to the next insurgent presidential candidate and campaign, start when the establishment candidates do. That would make a huge difference.
Who do you see on the horizon? I mean, the other thing, as you said, is Bernie was a unique messenger. But how unique is he? Are there others out there who you think could carry that torch forward?
Well, one of the things that Donald Trump has shown us that literally anyone can run for president and win. It doesn't have to be someone with a history of being in elected office. What made Bernie effective as the messenger for his platform, anyone can adopt that platform that believes in it, was that, he'd had many, many years of being consistently right on the issues that people cared about. So I think we need any believable, authentic messenger who has actually shown that they're willing to go to the mat for the values that they profess. And I hope that we'll have, six or eight candidates running in the Democratic primary for 2020, and that the American people will actually get to have a choice this time without the Democratic establishment putting their thumb on the scale, and the people will choose the nominee, and then that nominee will have the support, not just the voters, but also the volunteers to help the campaign make it over the top, and so that we can take back the presidency in 2020.
Do you think Bernie Sanders would have beat Trump, and what was your research showing you about that matchup?
I'm so sorry. Can you please just repeat that?
Sure. Could Bernie have beaten Trump? What did your research show you about that?
Oh, well, I mean, we don't have any access to research on that, but any private research. But there were some polls done. And there was some evidence, all through the whole campaign that Bernie would have been a great matchup to Donald Trump. And, I don't know, personally, we do think that Bernie would have won.
So here we are a week into the soon-to-be Trump presidency. And what issue do you think could galvanize the movement for both the 2018 and 2020 elections?
I think that there's one clear issue that will galvanize both of those elections, and that is rebuilding the American economy. That's what we just saw. That's the critical issue that is going to move Americans. And I think that if a candidate rises and a movement rises with a real credible plan, even going farther than Bernie, not just pointing at the problem and not just, talking about the billionaire class, but also providing more concrete solutions for how we're actually going to rebuild the economy and get incomes going back up, that I think will really make a difference.
You write in your book includes 22 rules for revolutionaries, and the subtitle, How Big Organizing Can Change Everything. Becky, what's big organizing?
So big organizing is a kind of organizing where you talk to as many people as possible and you get them involved in your campaign, both on volunteers and voters. And the only way to get a lot of people involved in your campaign is actually talk about the big things that they want to see. So we're really advocating a new kind of organizing where you ask people to do something big, to win something big in big numbers, and abandon this kind of small ball that Democrats have been playing for years, where we just ask people to do something small to win something small, often something too small for people to even bother.
So what's the big ask that you would make of people right now? I mean, when you talk about revolution, you're talking about fundamental change. And one of the things actually that, Becky, you write about is addressing structural racism right off. How do you do that in a political campaign?
Well, you know, certainly having our movement put racism at the core of the message to everything is something that we're going to have to do if we're going to build a movement that's big enough to win. And, we believe that a coalition of white working class voters, Latino working class voters, and African American working class voters is going to be enough to push candidates over the top that are really going to change things in this country. I think a really big ask that we have right now would be for people to run for office. The Democratic establishment is simply not in touch with the America out there that most of us face every day. And Zach and a bunch of amazing volunteers from all over the country, from the Bernie campaign and other movements, have actually started a movement to elect a brand new Congress. And they're recruiting candidates right now, looking for nurses and teachers and engineers, people who've never been in elected office before, to run together for Congress and just take it all over and start making the changes that we need to see. So I'd urge you all to check out Zach's new project, brandnewcongress.org, and also to check out rulesforrevolutionaries.org, which has a lot of the lessons from the campaign and can get you started working in your own community.
What stands out? Yeah, Zach, were you going to say something?
Oh, I was just going to say thanks for the plug there, Becky. Yeah, we're excited about that campaign.
What is Brand New Congress?
Well, yeah, like Becky said, it's a big ask, like you said, and we're handpicking. The idea is to basically get, in a way, 400 Bernies and run them against all the incumbents in Congress, who really have been complicit, or flat out corrupt, over these decades of decline, and throw them out. And the idea is if we put all 400 on the ballot and on a website, on one website, with a big volunteer button and a big donate button, that we'll actually be able to raise hundreds of millions of dollars, just like Bernie did, just like Barack Obama did in 2008 as an insurgent candidate, and that we can actually win.
Is that what it's going to take to win back? What do you think is a timeline for winning back Congress?
It's hard to talk about timeline because, if we stick to what, the conventional wisdom says is possible, then, we'll have more people lose their homes, we'll have more people who can't go to college, we'll have more black people shot dead by police. And so we have to look at not what it seems like it's possible, but we have to look at the change that we need to see in our lives and then figure out how to get there. So no one thought that it was possible that Bernie could come so close to winning the Democratic nomination for presidency. And now, I think a lot of us believe that had he won the nomination, he would be the president today and not Donald Trump, which is, for many, a pretty unbelievable outcome.
Okay,
so, we believe that 2018 has the potential to be a wave election if we think about it as our chance to redo this year's disastrous presidential campaign.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Becky Bond and Zach Exley, co-authors of Rules for Revolutionaries, How Big Organizing Can Change Everything. Thanks so much for joining us on the Vermont Conversation. And that does it for this week's show. We'll be back next Wednesday at 1. You can hear this and all shows at VermontConversation.com. Thanks for listening. I'm David Goodman.
Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility has presented the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, change makers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. The special feature from VBSR is underwritten in part by Let's Grow Kids, focusing on the first years of child development. The Alchemist, serving the greater Waterbury community and Vermont since 2003 by CW Print and Design, formerly Coffee World, your local digital print shop, offering quick design and printing services for projects of all sizes. By Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, and ski erg. Proud to support nonprofit groups such as Local Motion, Vermont's statewide nonprofit advocate for walkable and bikeable communities. By Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers on energy transformation while delivering clean, reliable, and cost-effective power. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. As well as over 750 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more at www.vbsr.org.